guest today is Angela Dugan. Angela, how are you?
Good. How are you, David? Good
to
see you again.
I'm doing great. I already know the answer, but what do you do?
So I am a principal consultant with Polaris Solutions. We do not make snowmobiles. It's an IT consulting firm. We are based in Chicago and St. Louis, and we also have an office in Denver.
Uh-huh. Are you now? I know you're focused a lot on application lifecycle management. Is that the company as a whole focused on that?
Yeah, no, actually, it's not. We're a lot broader than that. So I focus mostly on the Agile and DevOps side of the house.
Okay.
Just because that's most recently what I've been really passionate about.
And you're an ALM MVP.
I am.
ALM MVP. Is that still what they're called now? There was a restructuring.
Yeah, there was some restructuring. So now, I mean, we still fall under Visual Studio tooling, but there is still an ALM MVP program.
Okay.
But yeah, so the other part of our business is we do technical leadership. We also do custom application development and some mobile work as well.
We were talking earlier about retrospectives of projects. And I've made a joke because we used to call those these meetings at the end of the project, we used to call them the post-mortem.
Right.
And there was some pushback. I guess because it sounded like
march.
too depressing. I don't think it was the death march implies that the whole thing was just horrible. But the postmortem implies that it's dead.
Right. And I think
so retrospective is more positive.
It's, right. Absolutely.
But it's really the same thing, right? We're just renaming it to something else.
Yeah, I think the big difference is postmortems tended to be something that you would do kind of at the end of the project, right? The project is done.
Okay, so it's not the same thing.
Right. And so with a retrospective, the idea is that, and so if in case there are folks listening who are like, what are you talking about, Angela?
Yeah.
So there are many frameworks that use the term retrospective. I come from kind of more of a Scrum background.
All right, what's your definition?
Yeah. So a retrospective to me is part of the Scrum cycle, right? So if, say you're going with 2-week sprints, the end of every 2 weeks, the team gets a chance during the retrospective to get together for a couple of hours. To talk about how that sprint went. So not just the project as a whole, but even like the last 2 weeks. Because to me, one of the challenges with the postmortem is, say, you know, back in the day when I started doing development, right, 20 years ago, projects could be 18 months. Nobody can remember past probably the last few weeks anyway.
Yeah.
Right. And so with the retrospective, A, it's fresh in your mind.
Yep.
Right. You're only focusing on the last couple of weeks. And one of the major tenets of Agile in general is, you know, relentless improvement, constantly trying to find ways to improve.
And part of that is constant feedback.
Yes. And so every 2 weeks you have a chance to talk to the team about what went well, what didn't, and how can we get better so that the next time we meet and have another retrospective, we're not talking about the same things, right? We're handling new challenges and hopefully improving ourselves. And so, you know, retrospective, if you look it up in the dictionary, it's all about kind of looking back on past events.
Okay. But this is more than that. It's also about thinking about how we can do better in the future.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I was struck. So when we used to do, I worked for consulting for many years, and part of that time we were doing waterfall methodologies. And I remember these post-mortem meetings. And what frustrated me about them wasn't that they were post-mortem. It wasn't that they were in the project. What frustrated me about them was that often we would figure out what we did wrong, and we would swear up and down that we would never make those mistakes again. And guess what?
You made them again.
We would make them over and over again. They didn't really stick. We would go off. The team would break up. We would go on our other projects, and I would find myself on the team making the same mistakes. And maybe it was because we waited so long. We would wait 12, 18 months before we'd have these things, and we couldn't implement those changes right away. Am I on the right track here?
Absolutely. And I feel like there's actually a couple of challenges there. So one is you probably had a lot of stuff, right? 18 months of what did we do wrong. It's kind of overwhelming. Where do you even begin to try to improve? And a lot of times, too, I'm thinking with kind of the old, larger projects, pretty much as soon as you finished one project, you picked up another.
Right.
So you never really got that chance to kind of slow down and say, how can we incorporate what we've learned? Because you've already gone to the next project mentally.
Well, we thought we did. We made the effort. We had the meeting. We documented. We wrote it down. But it didn't sink in. I guess I'm not sure why that was
the case. And sometimes, too, and this is something that I would tend to just talk to a team about, you know, if I'm doing like coaching or something, is making sure that part of the retrospective isn't just the team kind of sitting around and complaining and ranting, right? That sometimes that's cathartic, right?
Sure,
to get those things off your chest. But really the more productive thing is to make sure you're recording them, right? Yep. Recording them somewhere accessible, right? So I tend to use TFS everywhere I am just because I'm a TFS person.
Right.
So creating a backlog. Here are literally a list of the things that are coming out of our retrospectives. and assigning things to people and saying, hey, you know, for instance, you know, we're having an issue with code coverage, or we're not getting enough unit tests done, right? So actually having actionable items to say, who's going to make sure that we improve, and let's put a date on it and say, you know what, when we talk in our next retrospective in 2 weeks, let's make sure we've actually made some progress against it.
That, I think, is a key.
And that, you know, I talk to teams who do retrospectives. I've actually been doing a talk on improving Agile retrospectives. It's gotten a lot of popularity because I find most places I go, they're like, yeah, we used to do retrospectives, but we stopped doing them. And it's usually because of things like you said, nothing's coming out of them. We talk about the things that are going wrong.
We would file them in SharePoint somewhere.
Yeah, and no one ever looks at them.
And no one would look at them, because nobody was really responsible. I think that's the key, what you just mentioned there. There was an action item for Angela is going to be responsible for, I don't know, the communication back for getting faster communication to the bugs. That was a big problem.
Yeah, making people accountable. Yeah. And giving them ownership. And also another important thing, too, is not treating things that come up in the retrospective like they're outside of the scope of the project.
Right.
Because if you leave it as one of those things where you're like, well, my team is going to commit to as much as they can do in the sprint, and they'll just get that retrospective done in their free time. Like, that's not going to happen.
Right.
So a lot of times you have to think about, like, hey, do we need to actually factor that into our commitments and make sure that that is something that we're devoting time to.
Okay.
Because if you leave it to people to do when they have downtime, it's never, ever going to happen.
Now, you must get some pushback from your customers on that, because that's just one more meeting that people have to have, one more document they got to create. You've got to show some value in that.
Right. And that's another good reason to actually record what's happening. And I think another way to look at it is retros aren't just kind of creating bulleted lists, right? Mm-hmm. You should be kind of coming in with a theme of, here's what we want to focus on. Maybe we know quality is an issue, so let's talk about quality. And then come in with some actual hard data, right? Like, we're struggling because we have X number of bugs making it into production, or it's taking us this much time to turn around our bugs. Because that means as you improve those things, now I actually have metrics. I have a hard number.
And you know whether or not you've improved it.
Yes. And when people come back and say, well, I don't know about these retrospectives, you can say, well, listen, if it weren't for those retrospectives, we might still be having, you know, 50 bugs escaping to production a month. Now we're down to 10.
I
can probably put a dollar amount on that, or some kind of value.
Customers love dollar amounts.
Right? So sometimes it comes down to that as well, making sure that you're not just talking about the things that are going wrong, but that you can quantify things, right? It shouldn't just be opinion or something that's emotional. It should be, this is a fact, right? We are struggling with this, and here's some stuff we can quantify so that we know whether or not we're getting better. And again, you can use it to also justify, like, hey, we need to take some extra budget or some extra time to go address this.
Okay.
Where normally it might be hard to justify that.
Right, exactly. Yeah. If you're not writing code, then is there value in what you're doing?
Right.
Do you ever find that sometimes your customers have issues that pop up in retrospectives that you just can't deal with? That they say, okay, we acknowledge it's a problem. Let's just live with it. It's just not worth dealing with.
I think it would be hard to say that nothing can be dealt with, because I think some of them can certainly be stickier than others, right? So things that are technology problems, as long as people have access to budget or access to resources, those things generally, if you have the numbers, you can justify it. The things that sometimes get harder, and then I find that sometimes slip, are the problems that evolve because of things like communications issues or personality conflicts, things are a little harder to address.
Issues.
Yeah, and so I find that with any team trying to adopt any Agile framework, right, sometimes the hardest problem can be the things that get infused because we're working with people, right?
How do you deal with people issues?
Well,
because we're all different.
We don't call them people issues.
What do we call them?
Well, and honestly, sometimes it you have to get to the root of the issue, right? Because sometimes things that may look like a person issue up front, once you really dig into it, you find out it has more to do with how they're incentivized at work.
Sure.
Or, you know, I call it baggage that maybe they brought from a previous employer.
Yeah.
Like, hey, we're not used to being able to be honest. You know, we get yelled at if things are late, and so we tend to hold back. We're not honest.
And you're telling them it's okay to give constructive feedback, and they're not believing you because they've been
burned. There's a lot of almost like personal coaching that needs to happen when you're doing Agile, and not just on the process, right? Some of it is around
trust to be built up too.
Yeah, trust. Trust is a huge, huge thing. If you don't have trust, it's going to be really hard for the team to kind of come together and work really well together.
Do you see are there certain issues that you see over and over again from multiple customers, from multiple industries?
Honestly, probably one of the biggest ones that I see, and actually this kind of arcs over to another talk I've given a few times on imposter syndrome, which is where people don't feel confident enough to share when they don't know everything, right? People are, when it comes to estimating things, people are used to underestimating and overpromising because they want to make people happy. They don't want to admit they struggle with things. It's hard to ask for help. Right. And I've worked in environments where, and this is a tricky one because sometimes it's subtle, right? So for instance, daily stand-ups, right? Something that you do every day when you're on a scrum team, you get together with the team, you talk about how you're doing towards the goal. Are you still on track? Do you need any help? The asking for help and admitting that you're late or that things not getting done can be really hard for people. And sometimes even the team can contribute to it, even if they're joking around by saying, oh, you know, maybe if you weren't reading Reddit all day yesterday, or if you weren't up late drinking, or, you know, little jibes here and there, you know, then people kind of learn like, well, maybe I don't want to be so honest. Sure. And so that can be a tough one. You have to kind of look out for that.
Mm, okay.
And then the coaching becomes the whole team and not just really the person That's struggling.
Good. Yeah. Should we talk about, is there more we should talk about that we have not? About retrospectives?
There's certainly a lot you could talk about with retrospectives. I think this could potentially be a pretty big topic. I know there's some debate about, you know, how you manage retrospectives, how you structure them.
You're doing talks at conferences on this, right?
I am. So I've given a couple of talks, one at the QAI Quest conference and Chicago Code Camp on improving your agile retrospectives. Nice thing is, if people want to see them, I've given them a few times. My slides are actually out on slideshare.net, so they can certainly pull them down. And I'm always happy to speak at a user group, so if there's any local meetups or anything that one of
you. How should people get
a
hold of you?
So they can find me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Oak Park Girl. Otherwise, they can certainly email me. It's pretty simple. It's Angela@PolarisSolutions.com. I'm always happy to do that. And I do actually have a talk coming up at that conference in August. That is actually the name, thatconference.com.
It's a great conference.
It's a great conference. I'm going to be giving a talk on the Scaled Agile Framework there.
Angela, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. So I just want to thank David Girard for giving me an opportunity to be on this podcast. I certainly always love talking about technology, about process, and potentially making some new friends on social media. Thank you.